are going to follow. And I think we're just deluding ourselves to think that that's going to happen. In fact, the global warming and climate change process is well underway, and we're just going to have to ride the rocky waves with that one and see where it takes us.
I don't believe that greenhouse gases have been the major factor. I think these are much longer-term cosmic cycles that we go through over...
Well, I think it's probably a combination, and you know, I kind of go along with what Elizabeth Kohlberg's been writing in The New Yorker about this, and I would have to make the point that it doesn't matter anymore whether it's man-made or not man-made. It's there. And it especially doesn't matter because we're not going to do anything about it even if it is man-made. So whether it's a combination of natural long-term cycles, or, you know, the climate of the Earth is demonstrably very unstable. There's no question about it. You know, it changes a lot from epoch to epoch. And, you know, our contribution may have, you know, made it, exaggerated it somewhat. But it sort of doesn't matter. It's happening. We gotta live with it.
I told people starting around 2000 that we would begin to see tremendous crossovers between groups that had previously been enemies in the political arena. Mm-hmm. And what I'm discovering more and more is that you said you were like a registered Democrat who's I'm a registered Republican who's very nonplussed about it.
Yeah.
So, and yet I'm finding, wait a minute, I agree with these people on the other side of the fence more and more. We're sort of arriving at the same destination by different routes, so to speak.
Well, you know, I think that the American political ideology and at all layers and levels is really in play now. The Democratic Party as it currently exists could actually dry up and blow away in a very short time if it doesn't start developing some set of ideas that are meaningful. They could literally go the way of the Whigs. You know, and the Whigs were the leading political party in America in 1852. By 1857 and 58, they vanished. Everybody said, where are my Whigs? What happened to the Whigs? Oh, they're gone. They vanished.
They became irrelevant to what was
going on. They became irrelevant. And they vanished so quickly that it made people's heads spin. And this is exactly what's happening with the Democratic Party of John Kerry and Harry Reid. They don't stand for anything, they don't understand anything, and they're not saying anything. And I'm a Democrat.
You must be really popular among your friends.
Well, my friends are the people who have bumper stickers on their SUVs that say war is not the answer.
Views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Good evening and welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. My name is Roy Avila and I will be your host for this evening. You know, you might want to call your friends and you might want to dial up on the computer as they said in the open at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio and because we're going to have a very, very exciting show. Just returned from the Freedom 21 conference in Reno. Wow, what an experience. We have some great guests. Michael Chapman will be joining us. Hopefully all of our friends who we met there in Reno will call in and tell you some of the exciting things that are happening in the freedom movement. But before we go on, you know, I sometimes I'm right on with what John Loeffler says, but I think that show that we just listened to is one of the worst shows I ever seen him do. You know, the guy who he was talking to, whatever his name was, is probably really good at selling books, but I think his ideas are slightly way out there. So, and as it says in the opening, you know, my comments are mine, and that's what my comments are on that terrible show. So anyway, so we'll try to balance that. I think on the phone we have with us Michael Chapman. I had the pleasure of actually meeting Michael. We talked on the radio before, but are you there, Michael?
Yes, I am, Roy. How are you?
You know, I'm still energized from that conference. I've been telling people when, you know, I've heard you speak. We've spoken on the radio, and I was listening to your presentation, and literally I had to get out of my chair because I was so partially mad, partially excited that I just wanted to walk out the door and go into the street and start dragging people into the room so they could listen to what it is that you had to say. It was it's so important, and we're being so having the wool pull over our eyes. I can't even express how it made me feel.
Yeah, you know, I get that a lot, Roy. One of the things that I told you about there is, realistically, you know, we're fighting the sustainable development, so-called sustainable development movement, on all kinds of fronts. But when people find out that it has circled around behind them and influenced the curriculum in their children's classroom, then you're messing with my kids. And that makes parents and adults very angry to find out that the battles they're facing on the front lines have already been lost in the classroom.
Well, and, you know, a lot of us have kids, grandchildren. You know, we were all former students, you know, and to listen to how long it's been going on and how deep it is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. I trace it back to 1973 here in Minnesota, and various levels of implementation in every single state in the country, especially now through the National Standards Movement. Most people don't realize we have a national curriculum standards for every single subject, right down to art, music, history, you know, everything. Mathematics, the works.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Remember, call us, 1-888-245-LIBERTY. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Michael Chapman, kind of doing a roundup on the Freedom 21 conference in Reno, and talking about some of the really deep issues that we should all be concerned about. You know, if you, like I said, if you have kids or you have grandchildren, you know, or you have friends who are young and in school, you know, call your neighbors, because this is something that you definitely want to hear. Michael, give me a little bit of feedback on your perspective of how Reno went.
Well, I think it was a great conference. You know, sustainable development is one of those terms that on the face of it, everybody wonders, well, what's wrong with that? And the folks that Tom DeWeese and Henry Lamb and Michael Shaw and others pulled together to bring in to the conference really impressed me on a lot of fronts. I learned a lot at this conference, and I thought I knew just about every direction this thing was hitting. And I learned something that just is mind-boggling, and that is that there is a sustainable medicine, mm-hmm. an idea for the whole medical community involved in this thing. I mean, this is literally a push to control every aspect of our free lives and put them under the yoke of a tyrannical global government. And that is just... you know, it was really something. So there were some terrific speakers there who were very knowledgeable. great authors and folks who have really researched this material. You know, Michael Kaufman, Dr. Kaufman, you know, a postdoctorate level marine or environmental scientist to expose the environmental science fraud. You know, that the environment is the, of course, the justification for this whole animal.
Well, when you see those maps of his of how, you know, they're going to move people off the land, it's just crazy.
Yeah, they've got the plans, and, you know, I'd really I'd urge your listeners to go to Michael's website. You know, I wasn't prepared to give that website out for you, but I'm sure you've probably got it there.
Oh, yeah, and if they come to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz .net page, we have links to you
okay,
and everybody.
Okay, great. Yeah, because you can literally go to your state and see what the UN land grab plan is for your state. You can see where the buffer zones are, where there will be no allowable human habitation whatsoever, where people will be allowed to live. I mean, this is radical stuff, and most people don't believe you unless they see the evidence for themselves, and that's what this conference was so good about.
Hopefully they're going to call you and ask any question that they want to know about education at 888-245-LIBERTY. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm talking with Michael Chapman on education and the manipulation of our young people's minds in the classroom, and how sustainable development wants to control all of our lives. Michael, tell me a bit about how this all started for you.
Well, it really started with an understanding of our true heritage and how that had been censored from the classroom, and I've been working in that for probably 15 to 20 years through American Heritage Research.
Was there something in particular that got you in on that, or you're just a history guy?
Well, I just love history, but
okay.
Probably what brought me into the realm of education was my own children's textbooks, finding out that the history that they were learning, even in a Christian school, was not accurate to the truth of our heritage. And so I started pursuing you know, exposing that fraud, and my website, AmericanHeritageResearch.com, I've got materials that will show you the comparisons between the founding writings and what is in our kids' textbooks. As far as sustainable development, it really became an understanding later through the materials of Tom DeWeese and Michael Kaufman that really opened my eyes to a larger plan that what I was dealing with was just a part of. And, of course, this year begins the United Nations declared Decade of Education for Sustainable Development. And as I started to research what that meant for our children's curriculum, I saw a lot of parallels in the EFA, the Education for All movement within the United Nations, and the UNESCO framework for curriculum, and also the international assessment models. And I saw the parallels and the combination of No Child Left Behind and the NAEP assessments and a lot of the curriculum standards and actually the curriculum itself that I was finding within the classroom of our own kids. So I started doing research and finding out a lot of the sources, and that's really you know, how I got involved in this. Then Tom DeWeese saw me speak. I think we were out in California once, as a matter of fact, and he saw my presentation, and he recognized that this was the same enemy that he was fighting, and so he worked to merge the education battle with the land rights folks, and we found out that, my gosh, we were fighting the same beast from different sides. Different sides of the beast, not the same side for freedom. So I work now with an organization that is just tremendous in exposing a lot of the frauds within the federal curriculum, and we've actually brought the whole sustainable development agenda to their knowledge, and that is edwatch.org. And it is that organization that has really grown by leaps and bounds by teaching parents and teaching teachers and school boards and others what this really is and what we are facing and fighting.
One thing that I've noticed, even, you know, as recently as driving in on the radio today, when people get close to this issue who don't believe in it or are against it, the first thing that comes out of them, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, well, that's an easy cop-out, but in reality, there's no conspiracy here. They've written everything down. All you have to do is pick up their books and read it. I'd suggest finding a copy of the 1987 World Commission on Environment and Development report called Our Common Future. I believe it may be out of print, but if you do searches on Google or Abe Books and some of the other rare book areas, you'll find it. But that lays out the entire plan, and you'll recognize, I don't care who you are, you read this book, you'll recognize the agenda for what it is. And you can go on to UNESCO's website and actually download a copy of Agenda 21. I'm not real familiar with your listeners and how much they know about all this material, but this is certainly no conspiracy when you can go on the web right to UNESCO's own website and read this stuff. You know, the Agenda 21 from 1992 Rio Earth Summit is the plan and the map for education for sustainable development. It is the curriculum.
Well, and as you pointed out in your talk, what one of the things that struck me is, initially, what was the purpose of education?
Well, that's a good question to ask people today, because most people, if you ask, well, what's the purpose of education, they would ultimately say, or likely say, well, it's to prepare for your eventual career, or to get training and what you need for what you're going to do. And that was not ever the intention of education, according to our founding fathers. Education was about passing on the keys of freedom to future generations, the knowledge they would need to run a country. And I like to liken that to the days of kings and queens, in the systems, the feudal systems, and the land barons, who, you know, the common laborers were only trained for what they would be doing as their function for society. The best education was reserved for the princes and princesses who would one day grow up to rule the nation, the royalty. They had to know economics. They had to know history. They had to know geography and a lot of knowledge, because they would one day grow up to rule the nation. Well, in America, we are a self-governing people, and that means all of our children are the princes and princesses who will grow up to rule this nation. So it doesn't matter if you become a truck driver or a waitress or a doctor or lawyer, you still have to have the fundamental basis of what freedom looks like and how to carry that on into future generations. And that's the really galling point with me about what the Education for Sustainable Development movement is all about. They actually admit in their documentation, and I can give you the footnotes for this, the ESDtoolkit.org, it's the site of the toolkit for Education for Sustainable Development in the United States. And they actually say in there, in that document, that highly educated people consume more resources, and therefore, higher education and knowledge is a threat to sustainable development.
Well,
and, you know, we've been fighting this thing called dumbing down of America for years and years and years. Well, right here in this document, you find out why. There's this idea that, you know, people think of sustainable development as sustaining development. Well, it's just the opposite. They want to reduce development for the sustainability of the planet's resources. It's a radical environmentalist agenda, and they recognize that highly educated people consume more resources.
Well, we're blessed to have a caller on the phone, one of our speakers at the Reno Conference, Orlean. And Orlean, pronounce your last name for me so I pronounce it correctly.
It's Curlad.
And you're the president of the California Eagle Forum.
That's right.
Well, hi, Orlean. It's real good to hear from you again, too.
Hi, I didn't come in time to hear your name.
Oh, it's Michael Chapman.
Oh, wonderful. I thought that's who it was, but I wanted to make sure.
Well, I mean, give us a little bit of your, on your take of the Reno conference.
Well, I am so impressed with it. I went to it for the first time last year and just loved all of the speakers and was so delighted to be able to come back and be a speaker myself. And I'm so concerned about what is going on in our public schools. I'm a substitute teacher, and I see the environmental indoctrination everywhere, and they will not allow any other viewpoint. I've tried to bring in a book that was called Facts, Not Fear, written by two college professors that actually allowed a different viewpoint, one that gave a little bit of common sense and reason. I bought a whole case of the books and would offer them as a free book to the libraries, and I'd come back a month later and ask how the book was doing, and I would be told that it was taken off the shelf because it didn't go along with the philosophy of the teachers. So there's just no other chance to give any other viewpoint than what they want.
Was there a particular issue or instance that really got you involved in this?
Yes, it was actually about 12 years ago, an article that came out in the newspaper in Santa Rosa, written by a 14-year-old girl who went to my son's same junior high, that's what they were called back then, now they're middle schools. But she wrote a letter to the editor saying that because of what she had been taught in her environmental science class, she was ashamed of being human and wished that Homo sapiens had never been created. And then she went on to say the reasons for this. Well, I was so shocked by this letter to the editor, and I read it to my 17-year-old son, and he said, "Oh, she's right, Mother. I've been taught this, that the world would be a better place if man were not on it." And then I realized that my own son had had this indoctrination, and it was such a shock to me that I began to do research on all that this young girl had said, found out every bit of it was false, that there was no truth to it, and I wrote a letter back to the editor saying what the truth was, but they would not publish it. They said that would hurt the tender feelings of a 14-year-old girl. So that caused me to even do more research, and that's how I really got involved in this whole environmental movement. So in a way, I'm thankful that she wrote this letter. Otherwise, perhaps I would go on thinking environmentalism was something good, but I know the truth behind it now.
And Michael, that's not only in the environmental realm. It's in the history and in what they call social studies, probably in about every subject except for math.
Yeah, well, it's actually in math as well.
Wow.
I hate to tell you. Math, they have something called process math for transformation. And like I said, every subject has a national standards, and it's the National Council on the Teachers of Mathematics who write the standards for math. What we know as fuzzy math is fuzzy on purpose. Standard 3 says that children must learn that mathematics is arbitrary and man-made, and that good solutions are arrived at by consensus.
Okay. We're going to pick up on that just a second. We've got to take another quick break. If you have any questions for our guest, call. Welcome back. We're talking with Michael Chapman and Orlean. I'll get your name eventually. So one more time. Say that again?
Just pretend it's a hair curler without the R on the end.
Oh, okay, Curla. Okay. From the California's Eagle Forum. We're talking about education. Go ahead and pick up on that fuzzy math.
Well, I was just going to say that the point of the subjects, by the way, people have to understand, are just the carriers for the 10 themes, the new attitudes, values, and beliefs all children must hold in order to institute or come to accept the sustainable development agendas. And so that is the same in mathematics. And since consensus is a bigger theme than knowledge of mathematics, you know, then the important piece of math is to learn consensus. So that's why they talk about process mathematics and a lot of the fuzzy things and group dynamics. A lot of the way that the classrooms are being divided, just kind of lead towards group and collective thinking rather than individual innovation. The point is they don't need to, you know, Dr. William Glasser says probably the key guru in the mathematics world today is that we should never drill our children in their math tables or their division tables, multiplication tables, because that harms children mentally when a $2 calculator will give you the answer. Well, the point is, they're training children which buttons to push, not training them or teaching them to understand the science behind the buttons.
I have seen this also as a substitute teacher. It's amazing, even in the final exam, they're allowed to use a calculator. No one is asked to memorize anything anymore. It's just absolutely amazing.
Well, I had my own experience with one of my children where there was not a need to spell correctly.
Yeah, and it's the same principle. They say, well, we've reached the point where technology will run spell checkers for you. And so they say it's no longer an important aspect of education to memorize things that technology can take care of. Of course, we should understand that the understanding of these fundamental principles teaches the mind to think and teaches for deeper reasoning skills, not just for a utilitarian purpose. Again, one of the things that I like to point out to people is notice the language shifting that's going on. We no longer give tests, we now assess children. Now, why is that? We no longer test because testing is about objective knowledge. Assessment is a value measurement. We assess your home for its value, your car for its value. We now assess your children to determine their value to the future new society in a sustainable world. And that is what we see as evidence in the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the nation's report card.
Well, we're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about the manipulation of our children's minds. If you have any questions for our guest, you can call 1-888-245-4237, or you can call up your neighbors and get on the computer and listen to us at freedom21santacruz.net. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back. We're talking with Michael Chapman and Orlene Curl.
Very good. You got it.
I keep trying. That's very important to me. I'm big on people's names. You know, Michael, you were touching on 10 principles in the educational system that they're trying to drive through. Expand on that a little bit.
Well, the 10 principles are really attitudinal principles. The labeling that they give them are basically, excuse me here while I dig out the book. The Curriculum Standards for Social Studies lays the 10 themes out. And the 10 themes are, number one, culture. And really that is a multicultural, pluralistic worldview. Time, continuity, and change. And this is the evolutionary idea of society, that we are constantly evolving and in flux, and therefore the things of the past were good for the past, but may not be for the present and future. People, places, and environments, and this again is radical environmentalism, man's impact on his environment. The fourth one is individual development and identity. This is the mental health testing and mental health screening ideals. Then the fifth, individuals, groups, institutions, then power, authority, and governance. And again, this is the power of government over people rather than proper governance and the power of the people. It's a flip-flop. It's replacing the Declaration principles with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which I hope by now your listeners might understand that if they read Article 29 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it tells you where your rights come from. It says right there, government. And so government becomes the arbiter of what your rights are, rather than, as our Declaration states, inalienable rights given by a creator God, when government's function is simply to protect those rights. It's a complete sea change in understanding the authority and power of government. And then it goes on and on until you get to the ninth is global connections, the tenth is civic ideals and practices. And this is the cornerstone of the new federal curriculum. Civics is the key to everything. And that is why the Center for Civic Education is listed in the No Child Left Behind and specifically funded. It's a radical non-government organization out of Berkeley who has the contract to write the nation's civic standards, the nation's model textbook called We the People, and they have hold the contract to write the criteria for the NAEP test in civics. And their website is civiced.org. And if you go to their website, at least the last time I looked, they still had posted an article called 21st Century Mission of Schools. And this says it all. They say, in the past century, the civic mission of schools was education for democracy in a sovereign state. In this century, by contrast, education will become everywhere more global and international, and we ought to improve our curricular frameworks and standards for a world transformed by globally accepted and internationally transcendent principles. And you see that happening clearly today when the Supreme Court looks to international law to buttress their decisions. You see that every day, as a matter of fact. If you happen to visit a public school classroom, look at any social studies classroom from fourth grade up, and if you don't see global citizenship as one of the prime themes within that curriculum, then you're just not paying attention. And these are the themes now that all subjects carry. Keep in mind, the subjects are simply carriers for the 10 themes of education. That's the reason we no longer teach history in our public schools. We teach social studies. There's an outcome agenda to social studies, and those 10 outcomes are the agenda. It's outcome-based education. That's what it means. All children will believe, will value, and will act in these ways. And then these themes define how that will be. And then we assess them to determine whether or not that the curriculum is working for that particular child.
And I know in your talk you said, you know, you challenge any parent to pull out a book out of their child's classroom and you'll show them exactly how that's working.
It's every publisher, every grade, every textbook that I've ever been shown.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. If you have any questions for our guests, call 1-888-245-LIBERTY. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. We're talking with Michael Chapman and Orlean Curl from Michael's from you're with a couple of organizations, EdWatch and
Search.com. EdWatch is probably our key functional organization. We've got an army now of 30,000 strong on our email network all over the country. We've got several great speakers that travel around the country exposing these agendas, including Dr. Karen Ephraim, who, by the way, single-handedly stopped the forced mental health screening of three-year-olds here in the state of Minnesota. We just passed that bill this week.
And she'll be a guest on our second hour.
Oh, terrific. And we've also got Alan Quist, a political professor, a philosophy professor at Bethany College, who's written two terrific books, Fed Ed and America's Schools, his follow-up to that book that explains a lot of what's going on in education. And all of that stuff and all of our bios and background and our email alerts are available at edwatch.org. Get on that website and sign up for our email alerts. We've got a full-time lobbyist in Washington. We're working with Dr. Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, on putting amendments in some of these dangerous bills to protect parents' rights.
Well, Arlene, talk a little bit about the work of the Eagle Forum.
Well, Eagle Forum totally supports EdWatch. In fact, we often have them as our speakers at some of our conferences. And Phyllis Schlafly is very supportive of what they are doing. She's been fighting all of the radical changes in our public schools for many, many years. I've had Dr. Michael Kaufman, who's also a scientist working with EdWatch, and I've had Michael Chapman come and speak at our conference, as well as several other people, and I just received Ellen Quist's book at this Freedom 21 conference. I'm so impressed with it. I've read about half of it, America's Schools, The Battleground for Freedom. He has a great chapter in there called Integrated Math that tells exactly what Michael has just been talking about, how math now has been so changed and infiltrated with multiculturalism, environmentalism, and it's not at all an exact science or an exact truth anymore. They want people to think that math is just one of those many things that is no longer considered true. Instead, it's considered a construct, which is not reality. Therefore, no one really has to worry about memorizing it. And they mainly ask the students how they feel about math and their subjects now. It's all part of the outcome-based education. It's really based on feelings rather than true academics.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come right back. We're back with Arlene Curl, the president of the California Eagles Forum, and Michael Chapman from EdWatch. Go ahead and continue with your comment, Arlene.
Well, I'm so impressed with Ellen Quist as well, because he's the one that first alerted me to this whole concept of Fed Ed and how the federal department has taken over education, which is totally contrary to our Constitution. The Constitution gives absolutely no mention of education, meaning for it to be left under local and state control. And what Michael was talking about at the beginning, our founding fathers truly believed that the purpose of education was to pass on to the next generation time-honored truths, culture, traditions, so that we could keep our freedoms going in our nation. It had nothing to do with preparing them for a career. In fact, it used to be that our education was so wonderful that if you graduated with a high school diploma, you had a broad-based liberal arts education that prepared you for just about any kind of a job. But that is no longer the case at all. Our education has been so dumbed down. And then with the plans now that are in effect with these different career pathways, a student will only be able to go into a career for which he has been trained with a dumbed-down education in his high school, and if he does not like that career, tough, he will have no other training. And it's so contrary to what our founding fathers established in this nation.
You know, I think, you know, most teachers that I run into are well-meaning individuals. Is it just that everything's so tied to the funding that it's kind of go along to get along?
I think that's truly part of it, and for the most part, our teachers have been dumbed down. You know, this has been going on for many, many years now. The teachers themselves came from a high school that was dumbed down. Their colleges have been dumbed down because they can't have the high standards they used to have because the high school students coming into colleges are no longer prepared. And then the teachers are under such tight reins with the National Education Association and the teacher unions that they have to belong to.
There's also the new teacher licensing rules that are sweeping the country. Minnesota adopted 250 pages of new rules for licensing of teachers, and this stuff is all throughout the licensing of teachers. In fact, I use a lot of the math quotes from the licensing when I speak, because it's so incredible to see what they're telling teachers of math, what they have to believe. And these are sets of beliefs, values, and attitudes just like children. One thing that we have going on in Minnesota is they're forcing a lot of the older teachers to retire, or actually offering early retirement incentives. At the same time, they're complaining that we're facing a teacher shortage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tells me they want out with the old and in with the new, those teachers who have been indoctrinated into the new system.
Over their education of the last 30 or 40 years.
That's the same thing is going on in California as well. The only thing that has helped save math, we have an incredible group here called MathematicallyCorrect.com that helped to reinstate a decent form of math. Otherwise, would be just as bad as all of the other states with this integrated math. But the teachers are under very tight control now, and the same thing, they're trying to get rid of the old teachers and bring in the new.
Michael, I know you've been successful in having some legislation passed. Would you talk a bit about that?
Oh, I'd love to. I mean, this is a terrific victory for us. We've been working on this bill for 6 years. One of them that passed just this year was the American Heritage and Education Act. And it simply allows teachers to bring in founding documents and founding writings without having to censor them for their religious writings. In fact, it's such a short little bill, I'd love to read it to
you. Please.
It says, school districts shall permit grade-level instruction for students to read and study America's founding documents, including documents that contributed to the foundation or maintenance of America's representative form of limited government, the Bill of Rights, our free market economic system, and patriotism. Furthermore, districts may not censor or restrain instruction in American or Minnesota state history or heritage based on religious references in original source documents, writings, speeches, proclamations, or records. Now, what this does here in Minnesota is it allows teachers who happen to know the truth about their history to bring in good resources without fear that the ACLU will come down on them for a so-called separation of church and state. Now, this isn't a religious document. It's simply allowing for the truth of our heritage to be taught in Minnesota public schools. You can see the full text of what that bill was supposed to look like. This was the version we finally got through the Democrat-controlled Senate, and basically because it's written in such a way that a vote against this bill would have been a vote in favor of censorship. And, of course, the left loves to tell you they're against censorship, so this was a good bill to pass. You can go on my website, AmericanHeritageResearch.com, and get the text of that bill. And there's various forms of that in about 11 states, I believe, now. And I urge you, if it's not in your state, to get this going in the state of California.
You know,
we have a teacher that we actually honored in our state because he was so bold to stand up against his principal who would not allow these original documents to be brought into his classroom. And we honored him at our education conference because he had the courage to do so, and he now has a lawsuit against this principal.
Yeah, he was fired, wasn't he?
Almost. I think because of his bold stand and bringing in an attorney, he was reinstated with his job, but he's still going through with this lawsuit.
Oh, excellent. Well, this would be a great bill to tag on to that to prevent this kind of thing from happening again.
It really will be. I'm going to have to talk to you more about it. That's wonderful.
Michael, being a history buff, what are we and our children missing from not being exposed to those founding documents? What are some of the real good inspirational things in there? I know I saw some of them in your presentation. That's what I'm going
for. Sure. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll cut right to the chase, and this is what is probably agenda number one, and that is the divorce of our Constitution from the Declaration of Independence principles. The things that separate us from every other democracy, and of course we're a constitutional republic, we have democratically elected representatives, but that does not make us a democracy.
Thank
Article
you.
4, Section 4 guarantees we won't be, as a matter of fact.
Can you say that again? I think people just don't hear that enough.
Yeah, well, the term democracy is not found in any of our founding writings. In our any of the state constitutions, it's not found in any of the early charters of our nation. Basically, we are a constitutional republic, and there's a huge difference. One is in form, that is representation, and the other is in content, and that is lines of authority. We are one nation under God, meaning that all of our base law comes from an original source. And all you have to do is go back to Blackstone's writings or Baron de Montesquieu or even Tocqueville, or John Locke, of course, but Tocqueville, the French historian who came to America to find out why our revolution worked where theirs failed, finally concluded that the Americans combined the notions of Christianity and of liberty so intimately in their minds it's impossible to make them conceive the one without the other. Now, that's a direct quote from the uncensored work. Most schools have the censored work. But what I remind people is that the nation's birthday is celebrated on July 4th, not September 17th. And it's celebrated July 4th because that's the date of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. That's where you find the charter stones that make this, that define us as a people. The Constitution was written in order to form a more perfect union. It became the working papers to put in place the principles of the Declaration. And so what you have are the educational elite trying to convince students through the curriculum that the Declaration was nothing but that, a declaration of our separation from Great Britain. Now, that's what it did and functioned, but it also defined why we were able to do that by an appeal to a higher authority than government and what the principles of good government really are. And they are, for instance, national sovereignty, natural law, self-evident truth, God-given inalienable rights of life, liberty, and happiness, and on and on. So what we find is, for instance, one of my arch nemesis is a man at the Fordham Foundation named Eric Martel, who is a history teacher in Washington, D.C., and he argued with us in Minnesota when we were trying to get the Declaration principles put back in our history standards, and he said, and I'm quoting, "It's a historical error to consider the Declaration a founding document that sets forth guiding principles for our nation." And here was his explanation. "The Declaration is only symbolically a founding document since it proclaimed independence. It has no legal status and establishes no rights or duties." End quote. Now that is the talking points of the cultural left who controls education. And I always like to contrast that with John Quincy Adams, for example, who said that the Declaration was the platform upon which the Constitution of the United States had been erected. Its virtues, its republican character, consisted in its conformity to the principles proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence. And it goes on, but that's from an original 1839 celebration speech on the Jubilee of our Constitution that happens to be in my private library. These are the kind of things that our children need to know and understand that they are not being taught, primarily because our teachers haven't got a clue, because they were never taught it either.
Well, I think not only our children, but there are many adults out there who have gone through the system who have never heard those things.
No, you're absolutely right. It's probably been three generations since any of this showed up accurately in curriculum. There may have been those books and whatnot here and there that teachers brought in on their own, but I'm talking about the organized, mainstream published curriculum.
I know when I was a young girl growing up in Idaho, we had to memorize all of these documents. We had to memorize the statements by some of our founding fathers, like Patrick Henry, "Give me liberty or give me death," Nathan Hale, and you ask the young girls and boys now in our public schools who made these statements, they don't even know, and they've never had to memorize these founding documents anymore.
You know, all they have to memorize now is, what is it? Recycle, reuse, and something else.
That's right.
Or another one that ties into the whole sustainable development agenda that's real popular here in Minnesota is think globally, act locally.
Yes, I hear that all over.
Yeah.
Well, we have a caller. We have Roger. Roger, where are you calling from?
Oh, Allentown, Pennsylvania. I didn't want to take away from the show so much.
Oh, no, not at all. Thank you for joining us.
I had a lot of stuff to jam out coming back. But I was just struck when you mentioned them trying to pull the declaration. Well, that isn't that not, after all, where it is just about the only place found their much vaunted doctrine of equality? So, I guess we can jettison that most sacred principle of the West then, right?
A good point. Very good point, yes.
Thank you, Roger.
And it's also such a sacred document that talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that our government was actually established to support those principles, not take them away.
That's right. That's right. And now today, if you look at the glossary of the National Standards on Civics and Government by the CCE, you find that they have defined citizenship: the status of being a member of a state, one who owes allegiance to the government. You see, once government becomes God, then the purpose of citizens is to honor and owe allegiance to that government, in the sense that no matter what that government does, is the question you would want to ask. Well, by this definition, that's absolutely true. See, we owe allegiance to the principles upon which this nation was founded. We the people are the government, and that is an important concept that is now lost and has been turned on its head. In fact, a distraught parent came up to me after a presentation I gave and gave me a copy of her daughter's test, and she was just really upset. And the test question is this: the term sovereignty refers to, the correct answer is C, the absolute authority a government has over its citizens.
Oh, how horrible.
Now, this was a test quiz on the role of government in America. So this is applying to America. Now, that's a true definition if you're speaking of a sovereign king, not of a self-governing people.
Well, a lot of the tests are worded like that.
That's right. There's a subtle shift taking place that, at first glance, most parents won't recognize. I do a lot of curriculum reviews, and I always use the teachers' margins to do the reviews where the answers are, so you can kind of see where they're trying to steer the kids. But they talk about terms that we as adults would think of as very good terms, like citizenship and civic virtue and the common good, even, and sovereignty, and these words that we've come to apply our meaning to. But when you look in the curriculum itself and see how they have reapplied a new meaning to these words, then you can start to see how they're shifting and shaping the thinking of our kids away from what we all know to be true.
I have had to teach from the book that's put out by the Center for Civic Education called We the People, that you have talked about, Michael, and it is just amazing how subtly they put these terms in and slowly move the teachers and the students towards what their mindset is. So at the very end, they truly have the kids believing that the global government is the best way, it's the evolution that we are all being prepared for.
Yep, that's absolutely right. The We the People book, a lot of people look at the front pages of the book and see all kinds of things talking about, they even call us a constitutional republic in the beginning, and a lot of nice sounding words and terms, until as you're pulled away from that towards the end, you find out that the book actually promotes the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as positive rights, and then ask the children if you're ready for global government. And it's not just this textbook. This is an important point. Houghton Mifflin, Silver, Burdett and Ginn, Heath, D.C. Heath, Macmillan, they're all now conforming to this one standard because this is where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
The national standards has defined this as the model curriculum. And so I see advertisements for textbooks on the backs of magazines and even in homeschool book guides that say conforms to the national standards. Conforms to the national standards.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question, 1-888-24-MILLION. Welcome back. Go ahead, Michael. Pick up on that.
Well, I was just speaking of how all of the curriculum is aligning itself to the national standards, the curriculum standards, as published by the model curriculum, We the People, the Citizen and the Constitution. One such book that I ran into, this kind of tells you where everything's at. It actually says that we adhere to the national standards. And there's a thinking question in the book that says, may citizens enjoy rights that are not listed in the Bill of Rights? Now, Orlean, I know how you'd answer this. You'd say, well, of course they can. But the teacher's answer in this textbook is no, they can't. In other words, they're trying to convince our kids that the Bill of Rights are enumerated rights, that you don't have rights unless they're listed in there, when actually, if you read the Bill of Rights, it's a limiting document for government. Congress shall make no law.
Exactly.
Et cetera. And then, of course, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, which give us rights beyond the Bill of Rights. These were just examples. But the textbooks have twisted that on its head, and the We the People model textbook actually says this. I'm just going to quote from the book here. As fundamental and lasting as its guarantees have been, past tense, the U.S. Bill of Rights is a document of 18th century reflecting the issues and concerns of the age in which it was written. They express a fear of government power. So, yes, indeed, they do express a fear, but for a reason. But the whole point here is that this is an old-fashioned document, and then the very next page goes right on into the positive rights of the Universal Declaration, which says instead of preventing the government from acting, they require it to act to ensure such things as economic security, health care, and a clean environment for its citizens. All those things which now we're measuring to make sure children assess that this is what they believe is now government's role.
Well, and a lot of the tests, it's, you know, should government be responsible for XYZ? And they always lead them and say, well, yeah, government should do everything.
That's right. And there is a book put out by the U.S. Department of Education, the National Center for Education Statistics actually published it, on what democracy means to ninth graders. And I use a lot of the charts out of there to show you the results of the curriculum. And for instance, most ninth graders now believe it's government's responsibility to redistribute wealth.
Hang on just a second. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with that. We'll be right back.
Okay.
I'm sorry we had to interrupt you. You know, it's that network we have all over the country. We have to give people time to get in and get out. And if you want to call from anywhere you are in the country, it's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 245-4237. We're talking with Michael Chapman and Orlean Curl. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just explaining some of the results from the National Center of Education Statistics on what democracy means to ninth graders. And what you find is the charts explain that there's a certain percentage of ninth graders who now believe it's government's responsibility to take care of these particular economic issues. One is that 84.2% of all ninth graders now believe it's government's responsibility to set prices, and 63.5% now believe it's government's responsibility to reduce differences in income and wealth among people. Now, these are considered right answers, and they actually rate the U.S. students' knowledge of history based on these charts with the rest of the world. You know, we hear that we're sinking below the rest of the world. We're not keeping up with the rest of the world. Well, it's because we're a free people. We want knowledge in our schools, not assessments of value. And so as we get closer and closer to looking at government's responsibility to take care of our every need, we are actually moving up on the rating scales.
And speaking of knowledge, we have another very knowledgeable person call in, one of our other presenters at the Freedom 21 Conference, Jeannie Soderman. Welcome, Jeannie.
Hi. How can we get the videotapes of the speakers? Because I especially liked Michael, who's talking this evening, and Madeline Cosman on sustainable medicine.
If you go, we'll have them through Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. in about a month.
Okay.
They're gathering all the tapes, and they'll be doing, you know, editing them together for quality, and at the Freedom21SantaCruz.net website, and we'll be able to get those for you.
Thank you.
Was a great conference, Jeannie. You did a great job over there as well.
Oh, thanks. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have another caller on the line? Hello, caller?
Yes, this is Pat Hamlin in Spokane, Washington.
Well, thank you for joining us, Pat.
You know, I was thinking about outsourcing the other day, and I was thinking about how the Jews, or the people of Israel, started having the Philistines sharpen their knives and their various other farm implements at a time when they really needed to have these to fight a battle against the Philistines. Children are like arrows in the hand of a warrior. What are we doing with our children?
Well, thank you for your call. Yes, that educational system of ours is really, really doing it to our children. I think not only do we need to re-educate our children, but we need to re-educate ourselves about what's going on so we can be more effective in turning the tide and helping organizations like Michael Chapman and Orlean Curls. Hello, Michael, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry. I thought I might have lost you there.
Oh, I was having trouble hearing there for a moment.
There was a big ringing in our ears.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, your caller actually had a good point. The whole philosophy of this education system that's driving us actually came out of the Soviet Union, and for that matter, Nazi Germany, where work was really the key of everything. School to work, cradle to grave learning, lifelong learning, all of these phrases can be found in 1950s, 1940s, and 1930s Soviet education books that I've been studying and plan to one day put together a presentation to compare the two systems.
Well, and in this form, we're just considered capital.
Yeah, we are human our children are human resources to be used under this utilitarian worldview. In fact, Houghton Mifflin actually assigns value based on what you produce for the nation.
Okay, Michael, stay with us. We're going to come back with Karen Ephraim. We'll be right back.
Shed his grace on me.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. I want to thank Orlean Curl, the president of the California Eagles Forum, for joining us. And I also want to let you know that if you're in the California area, later on in the year, I think it's in September or so, they're going to have a wonderful event in Santa Rosa. And if you want more information on what they're doing, you can do a search on the web for the California Eagles Forum and get all the details. Just want to let you know, if you've been listening for a while, there are many tools out there for you to learn more about what's going on in this movement. Michael Shaw just finished doing a series called The War on Reason. It's available today at the Freedom21SantaCruz.net website. There's also a really great piece called Understanding Sustainable Development Agenda 21, A Guide for Public Officials. It's something that you should know, and if you know anybody in office that they should know. We're back, Michael Chapman, with Ed. Karen. Oh, Karen's with us now. Oh, I know Michael was here for a while. We were trying to get him back, but Karen works with Michael. And Karen, are you there?
I am here.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your work.
Well, I'm a mom of three, trained as a pediatrician, who left practice a few years ago to raise my kids and started getting involved in public policy. And started on the state level with the general concern about state and federal government interference in education, and then sort of specialize in the mental health and early childhood areas.
Was there something in particular, you know, as you're going on being a mom trying to raise your kids that riled you up to get involved?
Well, when I was still a practicing pediatrician, the sex education curricula really bothered me, because that was being, you know, it was the condoms overall kind of approach that really didn't give kids the true dangers of unabstinent sex. I mean, you know, being involved sexually before marriage and the risk of pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases.
You can do what you want with no consequence.
Right. And then I started seeing a big trend in my practice to use a lot of psychiatric medications, and that started really bothering me too.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, talk about more of your work. So stay right there. Welcome back. We're talking to Karen. Karen, pronounce your last name for me.
Ephraim.
Ephraim. And she's done a lot of work with Michael Chapman. I think we have Michael there, too?
Yes, I'm back.
Oh, good. We kind of lost you there for a second. Technical difficulties, you know. But anyway, we're talking with Karen, kind of your evolution into being involved in all of this mess with our young people. Continue, please, Karen.
Well, I saw a lot of partners in my large practice that I was involved in using psychiatric drugs, a lot of Ritalin and then some of the antidepressants like Prozac and those types of drugs, and I never felt really comfortable with them, and that was even before I learned what I know now, which is that they are terribly ineffective and they are terribly dangerous as far as side effects go. And, you know, that was 10 years ago.
And the explosion of its use has just been incredible.
Right. It has been. And it's taken all that time and more for the FDA and regulatory agencies around the world to finally admit that these drugs, A, don't work, especially in kids, and B, that they cause serious and even life-threatening side effects like suicide attempts, violence, psychosis, weight loss, for the Ritalin type of drugs, weight gain, obesity, diabetes for the antipsychotic drugs. So just really bad things, withdrawal, you know. So even if a child is put on them initially thinking it's, you know, the child and the family thinking it's only going to be a couple of years or a few months even, there are many people that have a very hard time getting off of them.
Well, they seem so quick to get children on them.
Right. And that's the other, one of the other problems is that the diagnostic criteria for all of these mental illnesses are very vague. And it's even admitted by the expert groups that make up the criteria. The people that write the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is kind of the Bible of psychiatric diagnosis, the World Health Organization, the U.S. Surgeon General, other psychiatric textbooks, they all admit that these things are vague, they're subjective, they call them social constructions, quote-unquote.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. If you have any questions, give us a call. Welcome back. We're talking to Karen Ephraim and Michael Chapman about the drugging of our children. Michael, how did you and Karen get together?
Well, we're both in Minnesota.
And, you guys in Minnesota are just happening. We did something with Take Back Minnesota. No, it was Wisconsin.
Well, I think so. You know, it's kind of like Freedom 21 out in California. You know, wherever the room is darkest, the candle looks the brightest. I think there's a few of us here in Minnesota, like there's a few of you out there in California, and the numbers are growing. And we just kind of, Karen kind of was the medical expert, and we were the, or I was the, in the curriculum side of things, and we've got a couple other folks like Alan Quist and Julie Quist and Senator Michelle Bachmann working with us, and we all kind of met in the middle and found out that this is all the same beast.
Well, bless you all. Talk about, I mean, you've had some really exciting things happen.
It has been amazing. It was a very hard-fought legislative session, and it lasted 6.5 months.
Wow.
It started January 4th or 2nd or something like that, and was supposed to end May 23rd, and that was the constitutional deadline. They didn't get anything done by then, so they were wrangling until the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30th, and they were supposed to have something passed or the government would shut down. And they still didn't get it done. And the government partially shut down for the first time in the state's history. And there were these enormous, what they call omnibus bills, which are, you know, everything but the kitchen sink involved in one certain topic, like education. So they were dealing with everything from preschool, early childhood, all the way through grade 12, and it was dealing with standards and testing and No Child Left Behind and preschool and mental health and sex education and American history, which Mike can tell you about, and all sorts of other things. But the big push this year was to expand early childhood programs and to do mental health screening for children entering kindergarten. And the way they wrote it was at least once by the age of 3.
Wow. Why?
It could conceivably mean at birth.
What's behind that? Why so early? And
well, there's there's many things behind it. Some of it is the result of the President's new Freedom Commission on Mental Health that was convened in 2002 and put out their report in 2003 and came out with a final report in 2004. And they had two really radical recommendations. One was universal mental health screening, supposedly to catch mental illnesses before they get really bad so that people will get treated sooner. And then the other thing is to use integrated, what they call integrated treatment strategies.
Mm.
And they recommended a particular program out of the state of Texas when George Bush was still governor, called the Texas Medication Algorithm Project, that requires the use of the newest, most expensive psychiatric drugs for depression and psychosis that have very severe side effects and that were no more effective than the old psychiatric drugs, which weren't that effective to begin with. So it was a huge boon to the pharmaceutical industry. And they were, in fact, involved in setting up this whole algorithm or set of guidelines that really weren't guidelines. They were requirements. If doctors in Texas and the other states that adopted this didn't use the drugs that were listed there, they had to justify it to the state. So this is really kind of serious stuff. But I first learned about this last summer, and I was appalled. I read about the state of Illinois passing a children's mental health law based on the recommendations of the New Freedom Commission that said that we are going to screen all children 0 to 18 and all pregnant women. And in the first draft of their plan, that was the legislation created this group called the Children's Mental Health Partnership that gave all the authority to one group, not to the legislature, but to this group,
Non-elected group?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said a non-elected group, I'm
sure. Yeah, exactly, exactly. But the first draft of their plan never used the words consent or voluntary once in the entire report.
It's amazing that you said it came out of the New American Freedom Commission?
The New Freedom Commission of Mental Health, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like much freedom to me.
Yeah, it's kind of Orwellian. But, so I first learned about this last summer, and then our group started working with folks in Illinois, and then with Congressman Ron Paul to try and stop this, because there was an appropriations bill last year to fund the recommendations of the New Freedom Commission. And the White House wanted $44 million, and we were trying to get it down to zero, but had to settle for $20 million, and tried to get in language that said that if federal money is going to be spent on this, there has to be consent, parental consent for kids. And through a lot of wrangling, unfortunately, it didn't pass. But now Congressman Paul has introduced standalone legislation, H.R. 181, called the Parental Consent Act, which says not only do these programs have to have parental consent, but they won't allow the programs to charge a parent with child abuse or child neglect.
Wow.
for refusing screening.
Where is that bill?
It's stuck.
The federal level is H.R. 181,
yeah,
but it's stuck.
It's in Congress.
Yeah, it's just gaining support. It did a very
similar
version passed here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Thanks to Karen's efforts. So
right.
It did pass here in the state at the state level.
And that will, I'm going to tell you about in a minute because that's really exciting. But right now we're waiting for it to get a committee hearing or to be amended into a larger bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it has 44 co-sponsors, including some from California. And it's just really important to get people to write in to their Congress people to ask them to co-sponsor it.
And so repeat the number?
It's H.R. 181. And if people go to the EdWatch website, that's edwatch.org, there's also, I'm sorry, EdAction, edaction.org. There is an alert, an e-action alert, that you just type in your name and address, and it will send a pre-written letter by email to that person's congressman to ask them to sign on to the letter, or sign on to the bill.
Well, and this is what this radio program is about. You know, this is what the whole, all of our work is about. It's about action. It's about getting involved. It's about trying to push that rock the other way, so...
Right.
Get on that edaction.org and check that out. Michael, you know, it's, I don't know, lack of a better description, interesting that it's involved with education. Talk about, you know, the drugging of our kids and its implication on their education.
Well, it really, that's why I wanted Karen on here. She's really the expert on this. I'll just say that all of the curriculum that we talked about in the first hour, what's in the books, the fact that we're assessing our kids to determine whether or not they hold these new values, attitudes, and beliefs are going to be the criteria now for the early childhood education through something called the NIAC standards. And again, Karen is our expert in that area. I'll just mention real quickly, because Karen's probably too modest to do so, she has put together a wonderful booklet called the Mental Health Screening Packet, the Universal Mental Health Screening Packet. It's complete with the research she's done into the medical journals. It has a copy of her PowerPoint and a copy of her some information articles that she put together, a real thin little book. So it's a very good little packet to get to help you become informed on these issues and to take this into your state and do what we've done here in Minnesota.
And how do we get that?
You can get that off our edwatch.org website.
Okay.
Or the EdAction one, either one.
Okay. And the EdAction. You got to understand, EdWatch is our tax-exempt, and EdAction is our political action committee. So we divide what we do based on what we're doing.
Well, I encourage everybody listening to get out there and support them both, because we just have to move this forward. So go ahead and, you know, Karen, and tell us what the effects are of, you know, drugging our kids and their education. I mean, it seems like a dumb question, but I think that some people don't realize how easy and how many of our kids are being drugged.
Well, there are tons of implications and tons of reasons. Drugging kids isn't going to help them, because most of the drugs actually impair the brain further so that learning doesn't happen well. And if you really look at the medical literature, it says that there hasn't been a single study in the 50 years that Ritalin and Adderall and those kinds of ADHD stimulant kind of drugs have been out. There hasn't been a single study showing long-term academic or social benefit to those drugs. And the antidepressants are the same way. And the newer antipsychotics haven't been out long enough, but I think once those drugs are there, it'll be the same thing. The reason that it's happening is A, financial. The drug companies want a piece of kids. They want more and more customers for their drugs. The schools and the states want more federal money, and they get money that's almost like a bounty for each child that's identified with a disability.
Wow.
In special education. And then you have the reason, and then you have a power interest, an indoctrination interest, because these diagnostic criteria are so vague and so subjective that they can easily become political and religious in nature. And let me just give you one example of that. There is a school violence prevention program sponsored by No Child Left Behind through the U.S. Department of Education called Early Warning, Timely Response. And it lists intolerance for others and prejudicial attitudes as a warning sign of violence and mental instability. And the website says, quote, all children have likes and dislikes. However, an intense prejudice toward others based on racial, ethnic, religious, language, gender, sexual orientation, ability, and physical appearance, when coupled with other factors, may lead to violent assaults against those who are perceived to be different, end quote. So if kids are perceived to be homophobic or racist or religiously intolerant, or, you know, question why people of the Muslim faith are bombing us,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, have been brought up in religious homes that believe that homosexuality is wrong, they can be labeled as potentially violent and mentally unstable, and in some cases required to take medications.
Wow.
And families have been threatened and actually charged with child abuse or child neglect or educational neglect for refusing the drugs on these kids.
And what happens to them?
Well, there were a couple of cases in New York where a judge demanded that the parents continue Ritalin and other drugs for boys that were labeled attention deficit disorder, to the point, even though this boy was having severe weight loss and sleep problems, and the parents had wanted to take them off. And there were other situations where parents have been threatened with the loss of their child actually being taken out of the home. And there was a horrific case in Texas where a mental health screening was done on a 13-year-old girl, and she was labeled as being suicidal just from a written test. And the psychiatrist decided that she needed to go to the state mental hospital, and when the parents refused, they brought in child protection, they took the child away, locked her in a state mental facility with no contact with her family for 5.5 months, physically restrained over 26 times, and put on 12 different medications, sometimes simultaneously, without her parents' knowledge or consent.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. But that is what's happening as a result of these drugs and this push to do mental health screening.
And it's a growing movement.
It is a growing movement. There was a huge battle in Texas a few months ago to do mental health screening, and by God's grace, we were able to stop that one. There was the plan in Minnesota to do this early childhood mental health screening, which not only were we able to stop, thank heaven, but we were able to recommend some language that did get included, that said that both refusal to medicate and refusal to have your child screened does not by itself constitute child abuse, child neglect, educational neglect, or medical neglect.
That's good. Well, we have a caller. Let's take the call. Caller, you're on the line. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Yucca Valley, California.
You have a question?
Yeah, I had a question and comment. I was just wondering, this whole federalized educational system, I always found in my study of it that it sort of leads back to the Prussian model and Hegelianism.
Right.
I was wondering if that's the correct assessment.
Yeah, absolutely true. It does lead back. It was called polytechnical education under the old Soviet Union. The East Germans had a name for it as well in that realm. The interesting thing is, back in 1990, Dr. Beck, under a $4 million grant from the U.S. Department of Education, did a study called Polytechnical Education A-Step. And that study compared, was really a treatise on the Soviet system. And if you read that report, it's about a 47-page long report, and still distributed through the National Council on the Research of Vocational Education, you'll find that it's all about following Marx and Lenin's writings. I mean, he quotes these folks entirely, and then says that this system should be carefully monitored for possible adaptation in American public education. This was back in 1990, and was one of the precursors to what became known here in the States as the school-to-work model. And that is what we're facing now. Most people think falsely that the school-to-work model is gone, but in fact it is still continued today under new names. For instance, smaller learning communities is the term that replaces the career clusters. Here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, public schools, all eighth graders must choose their career cluster by the end of eighth grade, and that becomes the basis for the curriculum for the rest of their high school careers. And those career clusters are very narrow. Cosmetology, auto mechanics, agriculture, things that are centered on the labor needed in the future economy.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Freedom 21 Radio Santa Cruz. If you have a question or a comment, you can call us at 1-888-245-4237. We have a caller on the line. I think it's Michael Shaw.
It is, Roy.
Oh, Michael, thank you for joining. You know, these people are amazing. I can't tell you how glad I am that I attended the Reno conference and to, you know, meet people like Michael Chapman, to hear from people like Karen Ephraim. It's, you know, there's some great Americans out there doing great work.
Well, there are, and that should come as no surprise to anyone. I mean, the human spirit is a resilient sort, and as this takeover begins to really unfold itself and prove itself as fact, the reaction is just increasingly inspiring, because American people don't want to give themselves up or give up their children or give up posterity to this idea that bugs matter more than people.
Right. Nice to talk to you, Michael.
Is this Karen?
It is.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Is Michael Chapman on the line still?
Yeah, I'm there too, Mike. Good to talk to you again.
Didn't know it'd be so soon. Yeah, well, it's not often we get to see each other and hear each other in the same week, but Reno was an amazing experience, and I think those of us who attended will continue to grow from what we learned from everyone for a good while forward.
Mm-hmm. And I understand they're taking the Reno 21 conference on the road now.
Well, that's something I didn't know about.
Oh, I heard it was going to be in possibly Kentucky next year.
Well, and hopefully the people who were there in attendance can take that the combined and learned message to their own communities and regions, as the Agenda 21 folks always refer to the American landscape, as we continue to get carved up and our children get allocated to a work order that serves something other than themselves.
And if they don't conform, they get drugged.
Apparently so. Karen hasn't even talked about the federal NIAC standards yet, but that's tell me what that acronym is again, Karen. I keep forgetting
the National Association for the Education of Young Children.
Yeah, and I've got a daughter who teaches in a preschool that this will affect as well, even private preschools. But this is so insidious. They're after our babies.
Go ahead and talk about that, Karen.
They really are. Excuse me.
Well, while she has a coughing spell until she comes back.
I'm okay.
You're back?
I'm back.
Okay.
The many of the topics. Oops.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Many of the topics that are covered in the K through 12 standards are being brought down to ages 3 and 4, and they're dealing with really controversial things like gender and gender identity, which leads into the whole homosexual idea. They're dealing with the common good in the idea of civics and social studies. They're dealing with environmentalism. They're dealing with all sorts of topics that three-year-olds really don't need to know and don't care about, and it's very much an extension of the kinds of things that Michael most likely talked to you about last hour, and that are being pushed through No Child Left Behind and the non-governmental organizations like the Center for Civic Education and the National Science Foundation and CECIS, which is the sex education group. And
where does all their funding come from?
Private foundations and actually our tax dollars.
This is an example of what is called public-private partnerships, and that really cuts to the essence of what sustainable development is. It's about reordering society and taking the economic base of free enterprise and requiring that all people who engage in anything become partners of government. So government's partners today are aristocrat foundations, like Karen's talking about, and non-governmental associations and organizations, rather, and certain multinational corporations and certain compliant local businesses, many nonprofits, and all of the sustainable grant recipients. And they're in every community because the federal government has abandoned its role as protector of our rights and has taken on the role of fueler for this sustainable new order around the world. And we do that with our tax dollars, and then we report as a federal government to the United Nations on how well we're implementing sustainable development and the domination of our children's minds and the theft of our citizens' lands. And boy, oh boy, that's serious business. And it is time that American people begin to take notice of what's happening to the people out in the rural lands and what's happening to their own children. And once you get that realization, you know, and I heard it for the first time at the Freedom 21 conferences this year, and that is, get your children out of government schools and be careful of the private schools, because they're using the same books and they're being indoctrinated to the same new order, and that is that children live for purposes of satisfying community needs rather than living a life that's their own. And boy, that's the essence of destroying the experience that is American. And that's why the freedom movement, the liberty movement, is poised to grow and is laying that foundation right now.
Yeah, this is a really important point that can't be overemphasized. Government through non-government organizations. If you read, for instance, the Workforce Investment Act that created the workforce boards in every state and forces the creation of a government economic development council, you will see that there's a new phrase introduced into the lexicon of American politics, and that is appointed representation. In other words,
wow, listen to that, Michael. I mean, appointed representation. You know, that means eliminating political boundaries. I mean, that's how you blur borders in order to steal everything.
Yeah, exactly. And what you find is that they'll, in the rules and the paperwork surrounding these boards, you'll see that it actually says there's representation of parents, there's teacher representatives, there's even government representatives. But none of those groups get to elect their own representation. They're all appointed from the next higher level that leads right up through the county, into the state, into the federal government, and finally, ultimately, to the United Nations if this plan is completely put in place.
Well, you know, and it really is a parallel of what Karen's talking about in respect to how it is that children are being evaluated for the compliance to a world where decisions are made by appointed dominators.
Right.
That's right. And Roy, you mentioned, you asked the question, how are they funded? Well, one such organization called the National Alliance for Restructuring Education, they changed their name, by the way, to America's Choice for School Design, is a nonprofit, non-government organization that will go into your state to assess your education system. Well, we have one of their catalogs of seminars they'll give, and the prices on these things, it's $10,000 per participant, minimum enrollment 50. So they have to have $500,000 to do this. Well, you and I or some teacher can't afford to go to this conference on their own. The only possible people who can afford this is government, using our tax dollars to fund these nonprofit organizations through their exorbitant fees. That's one of the ways, through money laundering in this respect, these non-government organizations are collecting our tax dollars as they go in to pretend to teach you about how to put in these new standards and different things like that as experts. And then they end up shaping the wind's direction, so when our politicians put their fingers up in the air, their wetting fingers up in the air, they know which way the wind's blowing. I mean, that's how it works.
Well, that's how it works, and you know, it strikes me that in the broader system of things, Mike, is that comes from one side of the political spectrum or another, and you know, let's call that a left side perspective. Then from the right side comes this globalist trade or managed trade policies that effectively break down our national borders because our government can't decide its own trade policy. Now, certainly, as a lot of libertarians out there will point out, that low protection means general growth. But when government can't even enact trade protections, then government has lost its real power to defend its boundary. And that's why it is that you know, on another level, the so-called right wing, we see the same dynamic coming that comes from the left wing. All of it is to consolidate power, either consolidate power over children or consolidate power over trade policy or consolidate power over foreign policy, etc. And step by step, the left-right is bringing us down, down, down.
Yeah, in reality, Mike, you point this out so well in your presentation. There is no division between left and right. Left and right seriously are political labels meant to convince us that there's a battle between left and right when really there is a single agenda. And the problem is that agenda operates outside the left and right. They use the rhetoric they need when the left is being targeted, and they use the rhetoric they need when the right is being targeted. So you hear about all this talk about free market economics. Actually, you don't hear that anymore. You hear about market economics. They tend to drop the word free and business and, you know, and attracting businesses and all these things that would appeal to the so-called right side of the political spectrum.
But all it's really doing is implementing this new system of economy called public-private partnership.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And unfortunately, in Minnesota, among the battles that didn't go so well for us this year was the establishment of a public-private partnership in early childhood education by business.
Imagine that. Government, teachers' unions, and business deciding how it is that five-year-olds are going to be...
No, three-year-olds.
Three-year-olds are going to be managed. You know, Mom, don't turn your children over to the state. That was the original feminist battle cry back in the 1800s. Mothers, don't turn your children over to the state. And now I say, Dads, if Mom's going to do it, don't you let it happen.
Yeah, well, one of the things that may or may not surprise you, Mike, guess who the mouthpiece is here in Minnesota for this early childhood education and mental health screening plan?
Who is it?
A man named Art Rolnick, who happens to work for the Federal Reserve Branch of Minneapolis.
Oh, my. My, oh, my. Talk about making children into biological resources to serve, you know, a mastering elite.
Yeah, a human resource for a planned economy is what we call it. You know, he's going around trying to convince businesses and convince citizens that dollar for dollar, it's better if we get these kids as babies and spend our money on them there because then they'll be better productive workers for our planned economy.
Well, that was exactly what I was told in 1962 when I was a young boy, was the mission and purpose of the Soviet Union.
And if you read the Beck report, you'll see the same thing again, except in glowing terms.
Right. Well, you know, I've forgotten who it was, Mike, who at the conference had queried an Eastern European about what living under communism was like, and she said, look out the window. Of course, Americans can look into their pocketbook and see a lot of money, so we feel good. But while our real productivity has been taken offshore, and our jobs increasingly are jobs that are funded through tax dollars and sustainable development programs, just ratcheting up our budget deficits while the sustainable grant recipients go out and blur the boundaries of our political system through this environmental program, we find that Isaiah, who said 2,800 years ago, if you can blur the boundaries and raid the treasuries, you can take the riches of all the people. Now, the riches haven't been taken, but the dynamic has been set up.
Yeah. You know, one of the great speakers at the conference was Joan Vian, who's probably attended more UN conferences than anybody living who didn't really want to be there. But she showed in her charts how all of this stuff, financing and everything, leads right back into the World Bank. And it's interesting because that's what I've been finding with the curriculum research, that if I trace it back far enough or deep enough, what I find at the root is the World Bank financing all of this stuff.
Wow. Well, and that's what Jeannie Soderman here of Santa Cruz County testified to as respect to water policy. The water policy, and we see battles locally, and we see battles in the state, and we see battles all over the West, and they're all reflective of the policies that come through the World Bank, and as Howard Hutchinson talked about from New Mexico, then come through the federal government and into these water plans for large regional areas, and he talked about the Western Water Plan that conformed to the World Bank policy. So America has lost its independence, and of course it doesn't matter if we got Kerry or Bush as president, it continues. They just play this phony battle between themselves while they work together to implement this globalist plan.
Yeah, well, and I always say that, you know, if you have a large global corporation and you change the CEO, what happens down in the mailroom continues the same way. and the federal government being the world's largest employer, it isn't really a whole lot different when you get down into these bureaucracies, dark rooms, and what their agenda is and what their plans are. Speaking of water, Mike, that is another great victory for us here at EdWatch up in Minnesota. We actually had a bill that almost passed. In fact, this was what Alan Quist talked about down at Freedom 21, called the Clean Water Heritage Act.
Legacy Act.
The Clean Water Legacy Act.
Always sweet sounding title.
Yeah, always great titles.
Isn't that a great title? I mean, who could possibly be against clean water? Come on. But what this was it was going to create an NGO supra-governing board authority of water that could have literally been run by the Sierra Club. And the folks said that this bill has no chance of failing. It has broad-based support. That we couldn't find anybody against it.
And they had a rally with 5,000 people.
Yeah, they had
all
a rally.
All the sportsmen and the conservationists.
Wow! So they got water users confused playing this game of theirs, and supporting the program that would actually deny the citizens the water.
Well, talk about the strange bedfellows! They even had Ducks Unlimited, one of the big hunting groups up here, at this rally, speaking in favor of this thing. The radical environmentalists had them convinced this would create more ducks somehow for their hunting. It was so ridiculous, but what this would actually do would be to absolutely put all water usage under the government microscope, where these boards would have authority to come on private property without permission and monitor water use. They even wanted to set up a metering system for private wells. That's how much control this bill had over water usage.
That same bill is coming to Santa Cruz.
And it's one of the major chapters in Agenda 21. If your listeners get onto the UNESCO website and just do a Google search for Agenda 21 or Summit, you will find the plan for the water.
Because if you control the water, you control everything else.
That's exactly right. And so we started just, you know, this is just shows you the power of citizenship. It was Alan Quist who took the point on this one, and he started talking to folks that we knew were good guys and just misinformed, and showing them in the bill exactly what this would do. And this created some momentum, and we started talking about it on local radio and writing articles and publishing articles about what this bill would mean. And a bill that had absolutely no chance of failure was actually stopped this year in Minnesota.
Yeah,
that is wonderful. It is an inspiration. Various states are doing things. I mean, Oregon is jumping up all over on property issues, and of course that was the first green state in the nation. And Utah has jumped up on the educational issue, and Wisconsin has jumped up on smart growth. And I'll tell you, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, sitting over in Berkeley, California, is facing some hard stuff here. I mean, they're in most counties coordinating with local government officials in order to implement sustainable development, and the people are beginning to catch on. Now, it's not the, you know, we haven't hit the critical mass yet that will be hit, and who knows what the what the sustainablers at the higher levels will do when that occurs. But,
yeah, and see, this is a good piece of hope. I mean, sometimes you look at this problem and it's so huge, it's easy to get discouraged. But we don't need to have a majority to win. It may have even been you, Michael. I don't remember which speaker mentioned this, but we had a minority who really were behind the American Revolution. But they had the truth on their side. They had what was right. And with God's help, we can defeat this thing. Sometimes all it means is going into that dark room and flipping the light switch on. Knowledge is key to freedom. You cannot be free unless you first have a knowledge of truth. And that is the key to winning these battles. And so individual citizens, you email or call your representatives, you'd be shocked to learn how impactful that is. It really and truly works. There are not that many people calling these folks. And when a couple of well-versed citizens call and shed some light and point out in the bill exactly these statements, These guys don't read the bills. They don't have time to read the bills.
Well, hang on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're back, probably with our final segment of the evening. We have Michael Shaw from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. We have Karen Efren from edaction.org. We have Michael Chapman from EdWatch. You guys are just, I just wanted to remind people of one thing. Karen, one more time about that bill and where they can get the mental health screening packet, etc.
Okay. The Parental Consent Act is H.R. 181 by Congressman Ron Paul. It has 44 co-sponsors, and they can get an email that has a pre-done letter. All they have to do is submit name and address off of, and go to our website where it's linked, and that's edaction, edaction.org. And the mental health screening packet is available at that website or EdWatch.
You've got to get that. You've got to get that. You have to. That's just so crazy about what you're talking about. People got to get that.
Well, I wish it were all a bad dream, but unfortunately it's not.
Well, if you could read your local newspaper, you wouldn't even know the dream existed.
Yeah.
They sure don't tell the American public about these issues that are in black and white. They're congressional legislation. And if you go to San Jose Mercury or the Santa Cruz Sentinel or the Minneapolis newspaper, you're just not going to find it.
No, that, you know, truly, that is why this radio station and program and your website, Michael, and our website, this is our committees of correspondence that our founders had, because they didn't trust the British press either. And so they had to find another way to get the word out to the colonies, and that's exactly what we're doing today.
And that's edwatch.org, freedom21santacruz.net, or for you fast ones, f21sc.net, and then edaction.org, and, you know, you check any of those websites, there's plenty of links to other great American groups doing their part.
You know, Mike, you mentioned earlier the federal government, and, you know, the comment that about that, that I'd like to expand on is to make the point that all three branches of the federal government really have abandoned their constitutional duty to protect our rights. They've become regulators and takers of our rights. And the Supreme Court, not just the Kelo case, which was narrowly decided, but there was a case 2 weeks before Kelo called Chevron, which basically negated property rights in this country. It said that any city can do whatever it wants, and it would not be subjected with a very far extreme on reason.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a break. We're back. Michael, go ahead and pick up on that. We've got a couple of minutes left, maybe five or so. So let's wrap them up, get our people going, and hopefully they'll have a great week, and we'll be back next week to give them more information. Go ahead, Michael Shaw.
Well, the essence on the federal government is the high court has really abandoned the citizen in his protection of property rights. In a case called Lingle versus Chevron, the court unanimously decided that the due process provisions of the Constitution did not apply in any material respect in regard to property rights. And that was a devastating blow. And, of course, we got the federal agencies. Every department has as its mission the implementation of sustainable development. And Congress is coming along passing a new Endangered Species Act that will make the old one look like it was friendly to people. So it's a three-prong attack coming from the federal government. The important thing for local communities is to begin to understand that when they accept federal monies, that's when they lose their liberty. It's not the taxation. A thief doesn't gain control of you. But when you take it back with conditions, the kinds of conditions the federal government is imposing, that's when you lose your liberty.
And as Dr. Michael Kaufman so aptly put it at the conference, without private property rights, there is no freedom.
That is true. I just want to let you know that there is one other good bill on the drugging issue. That's H.R. 1790-1790, called the Child Medication Safety Act, that prohibits school-led coercion of parents to put their kids on drugs. And that's by John Klein of Minnesota.
Well, Well, that's good. It's nice.
That's another another bill that you can support. And then I also want to say that in Washington, EdWatch and EdAction are working with a coalition of groups called the Liberty Coalition, that include groups like the Family Research Council and Free Congress and Homeschool Legal Defense and all those good groups out in Washington, and there is networking that can be done.
Well, Karen, you and I agree, but express with a little different focus. It's extraordinarily important that we support those organizations that are working hard in Washington. But if people around the country think Washington is going to save us, they're going to go down on the trains the same way that people in Germany did. You know, we've got to work at the local level. We've got to make sure that our local representatives are not in bed with federal agents who are working to take our liberty. We must stand independent in our own county behind our own sheriffs where that can work. It certainly wouldn't work in Santa Cruz. But in those places where we can, where we establish home rule. Because if you don't have home rule, you won't have anything.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that. I am just saying that there are people fighting in Washington for those things, but you're absolutely right that it needs to be a multi-pronged effort.
And clearly we're fighting uphill in Washington, D.C., and the work you're doing is fabulous, but it's an upstairs battle. I mean, I would venture to say that every senator is a sustainable developer or they would not have gotten the money to be elected.
The war is fought on many fronts. Michael Chapman, one last comment from you?
You know what? I'll let Benjamin Franklin make it. A nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. It is in the region of ignorance that tyranny begins. Check out American Heritage Act on AmericanHeritageResearch.com. Get the text and bring it into your states.
And ditto the mental health stuff that we were able to pass in Minnesota.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us tonight, our guests from the first hour, and everybody that was with us for this hour. Remember, check us out at freedom21santacruz.net or f21sc.net. Remember, you can get information at edaction.org, at edwatch.org, and you can pick up the Understanding Sustainable Development Agenda 21, a guide for public officials, a really good foundation for, you know, picking up the fight and taking it to them. And we appreciate you listening. Stay tuned to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio every week. Thank you for joining us. Good night.